Hello, and welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Home Healthcare News reporter Patrick Philbin. Today, our guest is Vince Moffitt, president and CEO of Basin Health Companies. In my conversation with Vince, we touch on how the CMS final rule will impact his agency, the importance of advocacy in home health, a pretty open and honest conversation about how difficult it is to maintain high star ratings in today's environment, some unique retention strategies, and so much more. Before we get into that conversation, a word from our sponsor, Care Academy. Care Academy is like the Netflix of healthcare. With more than 500 engaging classes to train, retain, and upskill care staff, Care Academy's unique platform takes your training to the next level, all while saving you time. Easy-to-use mobile classes make learning accessible anytime, anywhere, with support for multiple languages. Level up with specialized certifications in areas from dementia to mental health. Simple compliance reporting makes your audits a breeze. Achieve cost containment using text messaging and interoperability with multiple ecosystem platforms. Visit careacademy.com to start a free trial today. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Disrupt. My name is Patrick Philbin, a reporter with Home Healthcare News, and I am excited to welcome Vince Moffitt, president and CEO of Basin Health Companies. Vince, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks. It's good to be here. I've listened to your podcast many times, so it's kind of cool actually making an appearance.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, glad to have you here. And so before we get into, you know, some more specific questions about the company, let's just start with a quick introduction for our readers and listeners. Tell us who you are, what you do in your role at Basin Health, and a little bit more about your company.
Sure. As you mentioned in the intro, my name is Vince Moffitt, and the Basin Health Companies is located in Northwest New Mexico in the Four Corners area of the state. We serve three different counties, San Juan County, Cibola County, and McKinley County. And we've been in operation since 1992. We do traditional home health care and hospice. We also do Medicaid, PCS services, programs along those lines. And then we do private duty services as well.
And how did you get into the home health space, and how have you seen it evolve since then, and maybe even since the company's beginnings?
Well, you know, my story is kind of unique. You know, I don't come from a clinical background or actually traditionally from working in home health. I'm actually a retired battalion chief from the fire service, and my family started the service, you know, like I mentioned, in 1992. It was my mom, my dad. My dad did the administrative work. My mom was a nurse. My ex-wife was a CNA, eventually became a nurse. And then they had a receptionist. So the program now, or the company now, has grown from that original size. My parents grew it significantly through the years to we have over 700 employees now, and we're the largest private employer in Farmington where we're based. And I didn't really, you know, I'd been involved in aspects just because it was a family business. I'd come in and do, you know, some of their safety training and CPR and first aid, basic stuff like that. And when I retired from the fire service, they had talked to me about getting involved, and, you know, I was doing my own thing and had a very successful career outside of the fire service doing, I still have a rescue training business, and we do stuff on the international level and doing disaster response. And my sister had worked for him for years, and she passed away in 2016. And during that time, she was in the process of buying the company, and my parents were going to retire. And my dad came to me, and, you know, he said, you know, we'd really like to try to protect our employees. Was, I think, that their biggest goal there was to make sure that if they sold the company, they were worried about, you know, all the people had been loyal to them through the years, and people had stuck with them. And he asked me to look at it, and, you know, I did. And, you know, it was kind of a hard shift for me in some regards when I first started looking at it, because everything I'd done had been service oriented through my career. And And then I was able to connect the dots. I was like, man, this is definitely a service-oriented industry where we're providing, you know, much needed services to people, especially, you know, people who sometimes are less fortunate in regards to not only the services we provide, but the jobs we provide. And so I went ahead and made arrangements for financing and made a huge career shift into this market. And I'll tell you, it was like drinking from a fire hose, no pun intended. I had, you know, in my job right before when I made the transition, I was in a leadership role with a nonprofit, a large nonprofit called Team Rubicon, and we did disaster response. We had volunteers all around the world and staff around the world. And so the leadership and management part wasn't as difficult, but man, all the regulatory and compliance and just learning all the different aspects. And there's still tons, you know, I'm still learning every day. Luckily, I do have great staff and great resources out there. And, you know, I try to approach it from an area of making sure that we're doing everything legally and ethically and morally as possible. And, you know, keeping that as, you know, kind of my guiding star. And we've been successful. We've been able to grow since then and continue to thrive. As far as changes, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges and changes I've seen is that we really, you know, our payer mix when I first came in was 90% Medicare and 10%, you know, other payers. And now we're closer to probably, I mean, I think we're below 60% Medicare. And, you know, the large majority of the other 40% is Medicare Advantage. And it's had a huge impact on, you know, our income for sure for services and trying to figure out a way to navigate and survive until still be able to provide services. And, you know, and I feel an obligation to take care of those patients that move to these MA plans because they do need services, but it has been difficult. And that's probably the biggest change and challenge among so many other things that I think has affected us.
And you mentioned it earlier too, Vince, you know, from what I understand, you serve, you know, a pretty rural market out in the Four Corners area. What is unique about the service area that you serve? And, you know, touching on some more of those challenges, what are some of those challenges that come with serving that type of area?
Well, you know, we do live in a very rural area. You know, our county population is about 100,000 here within the county. The city of Farmington is about 50, and, you know, but we go out beyond that and we go into the reservation. And, you know, a lot of the areas we serve out there, one of the biggest issues is lack of connectivity. I think, you know, there's times in areas where we do not have any kind of service out there and trying to, you know, make contacts with the patients, keep, you know, be able to use our EVV systems and things along those lines are a challenge. And, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, living out here, not everything's mapped. And so trying to find some of the places where people live and their residences can be a challenge too. You know, we think it's kind of an adventure sometimes when we send our clinicians, our caregivers out to be able to find some of these residences and be able to make contact. And, you know, some of our patients out here don't have running water. They do not have, you know, electricity. And, you know, so, you know, we always talk about, you know, home health doesn't just happen on the visit. Really, the way home health really makes a difference is what happens in between the visits, making sure that we're training and educating and making sure that the patients and their caregivers know how to care for those family members and those patients out there. And, those can bring some challenges in itself for sure.
And shifting gears just a little bit, we're now, you know, less than a month removed from CMS publishing its final rule on home health reimbursement. I'll just ask, what were your first impressions of the final rule? And secondly, how will it affect your business specifically?
Well, I tell you, I was really glad that we didn't see the major cuts that were originally being projected. I think that was one of the things we were all watching and worried about. You know, this industry, you know, I know that there's a perception that Medicare is really, you know, pretty much, you know, paying for the services of Medicare Advantage and all these other services out there. But we're in a weird predicament. You know, we, you know, I think the latest stats I saw that over 50% of the agencies out there are operating in the red. They're not even, you know, breaking even. And so, you know, further cuts, I don't really think are something that we can sustain. And I think it's really going to challenge us. You know, I was glad to see that that was something that we were able to avoid. But between the, you know, the temporary adjustments and calculations, which I think is right around 3%, and then, you know, we had an increase that was not quite 1%, I think 0.8%, we're going to lose a little bit of funding and money there. But I think the biggest thing is the changes to the wage index. And I know for us, we're going to see a decrease in regards to there. So, you know, I do look at it as it's never as bad as you think it is, and it's never as good as you think it is as you're going into this. And we're going to continue to find ways to survive. But it does make it challenging for anybody to want to grow or add additional programs, things along those lines. But, you know, overall, I think more than anything, I was just really glad that we didn't see those, you know, over 8% cuts that were being presented.
Right. And the first time we spoke, Vince, we talked a lot about the importance of advocacy in home care. And I feel like that ties to some of the work that was done, you know, after CMS published its proposed rule. So I was hoping you'd share some of your philosophy on the importance of advocacy and how you feel, you know, you're doing your part in that endeavor.
Yeah, sure. I think advocacy is probably one of the most important things we can do right now in our industry. And, you know, I think there's several different aspects of it. For one, you know, I'm amazed at how little people in the community really understand about home health. And this includes in all the services, you know, whether they're the PCS caregiver services, home health and hospice. I mean, we're constantly out there educating, and we're seeing a change in, you know, staffing in our, you know, referral sources between physicians and clinicians out there, and having to re-educate people about the importance of these services and how it really can make a difference in, you know, outcomes and keeping people out of the facilities and making room for people that really need it, you know, along those lines. So I think just talking about our services and educating people about the great work our clinicians, our caregivers are doing is important. But I think it goes farther than that. You know, we've got to get out there. And I think at both the federal and our state levels, we've got to make sure that we're going out and we're talking to our elected officials and we have a voice. And, you know, I've been involved with NAC when we do the March on Washington's and the call to actions out there. I get involved with our state and during the legislative sessions. I'm the state association president. And during my term, that was one of my big call to actions for me, was I wanted to be more involved in advocacy. And what I found was, yeah, we have lobbyists that represent us and that go out there, and I think they do a great job. And, you know, we're real lucky in New Mexico to have a really strong advocate in our lobbyists. But, you know, I talking to more of these, our legislators, they tell me, they're like, we want to hear from the business owners. We want to hear from the people that are, these things are actually affecting, and hear their stories and actually hear from the employees and people that are really being affected by this. So, you know, I think there's a few things we can do. One is, you know, being a member of NAC and our state associations. So the National Association of Home Care and our state association is so important, because they are going out there and advocating for us. Whether we're members or not, they're advocating for our industry, and we need to make sure we're supporting them, because, you know, a lot of times they struggle financially and they're trying to really add services to be able to advocate for us. And so I think it's important. And there's education and there's things that come along there that really makes it worth it. I think the other thing is investing in our PACs. You know, I think, you know, anything, if there's a PAC in your state, or, you know, the ability to go out and make sure that we're thanking these officials that are actually doing this work for us and listening to us and are champions for our causes, to make sure that they realize that we support them as well. And, you know, in my state, I, you know, even go so far as I make, you know, contributions to the legislators that aren't even in my districts if they're champions for us, because I want to make sure they know we appreciate it. And it's an investment in my people, and it's an investment in my business and our industry. And then something really simple that I think a lot of people miss is these little call to action emails and that come out from NAC and from your state associations. It'll take like 30 seconds to fill out. You can modify the letter if you want, and it goes straight to whoever's in your districts, and they get those, and those make a huge difference. And there's such a light lift for everybody to do and to share. And I think sometimes, there's a lot of people out there say, oh, I don't share it with my staff because I don't want to inundate them with emails or, whatever the reasoning is, but it makes a big difference. So, and then the last piece is I talk to other business owners and stuff all the time about making sure that people in your community see your name, that you're investing in your community, whether it's sponsoring a sports team or other organizations, to make sure that you're marketing, so your brand is recognized, and then getting involved in anything you can where you may have an opportunity to create relationships with the people who are decision makers, whether it's your mayors and your city council. And I've had, our mayor in our hometown actually advocate for us on an issue that came up a few years ago, and he was writing letters to our legislators, and he has a good relationship with them. And then I built those relationships too through just my involvement, in things in my community, whether it's the Chamber of Commerce or, Kiwanis, whatever it might be. And you get to know these people on a more personal level, and then you can have the talks with them outside of the legislative session where things are so hectic and crazy. So I think those are many different aspects I think you can throw at it, but I think if people aren't doing something, we're really doing our employees and even our other colleagues a disservice. We've got to be involved, and we got to fight for something we believe in that really is kind of, it's still in some regards, a redheaded stepchild out there.
Mm, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned earlier too, Vince, just how difficult it might be for, adding certain programs on, and just because of the reimbursement uncertainty. And so I was just going to ask, what are some of your near-term growth goals for the company as it stands now? Here we are, in the late stages of 2023, and maybe looking ahead to 2024.
Yeah, and I'll be totally transparent here. I think, and I know if there's some of the listeners out there, hopefully they can resonate with this. It's not all, rainbows and butterflies, for sure. I think that for a lot of us, we're still recovering from COVID. I'm really grateful for things like, the PPP program and, the CARES Act and things like that that helped us make it through COVID. I made a commitment to all my employees that we were not going to lay anybody off and not going to put tremendous amount of pressure on them through COVID. It was so stressful for everybody. But now coming out of it, we're still, trying to regain our footing. I know that our census has shrunk considerably through COVID, and we have still yet to regain the kind of numbers we had pre-COVID. And so for me, when I look at what we're doing, we're really focusing on rebuilding a strong foundation of solid skills sets and policies and processes to face what I feel like is one of the biggest challenges we're going to have, which is value-based purchasing and making sure that we can be as effective and efficient as possible. We saw, our quality rating, our 5-star rating dropped a little bit, and we're trying to rebound that now by rebuilding things. And it's taken a strong commitment, and it's creating stress, for sure, of our staff as we go through here. But, when 2025 hits and we start to see those changes based off of, our outcomes, I think a lot of people are really going to be surprised if they're not looking at it already. They need to be looking at it. I think we're coming up towards the end of the year, and it's really hard to make a lot of changes in the last, month and a half of the year. But, we still are going to be, you're going to be farther behind if you're not looking at that and you're not preparing for what's going to happen 2 years down the line with our payments.
And on the flip side of that, you know, challenges or hurdles. What about, are there any opportunities that you're maybe most excited about if it comes to, you know, specifically basin specific or just kind of the industry in general?
Well, you know, I do get excited about the fact that I think that, you know, this industry is definitely something that is going to improve health outcomes in the United States. And I think that, you know, we saw a large number of mergers and acquisitions last year. And so there's definitely people and people coming in the market that hadn't been in the market. So I think everybody's seeing the potential. But I think that for me, you know, there's tremendous opportunity to improve our reputation, improve our outcomes, become better partners in the healthcare space through some of these incentives that CMS is giving us. That is, once again, I think these are no-brainers to us. That, you know, if you told somebody, you know, you're going to get a 5% cut in your reimbursement rate, you know, most people would be fighting tooth and nail if it came to advocacy, stuff like that. But, you know, when it comes to making changes in your organization, it's a little bit more difficult. But when you do sit back and you look at that and you look at these things that we can really do to not only improve our outcomes, but it's going to improve our reimbursement rates. I mean, I'm excited about that. I think this gives me an opportunity to kind of sharpen the tip of our spear, to improve our operations, become better partners with our other organizations. And then, you know, I think that there's a lot of technology and stuff out there that we're going to start seeing come up through telehealth and, you know, that hopefully will start to be able to be something that we can implement and get reimbursed for, that I think will increase our efficiency and ability to have touch points with our patients and their caregivers. So, you know, I am excited about that, but I think, you know, really the big thing is it's hard for me not to get too excited about adding more services unless we can find a way to at least get some sort of a reimbursement for those things. And it's just going to take some education. But, you know, if you implement a pilot program and you're not going to be reimbursed for it, it's hard to motivate people to be able to do something like that.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And shifting to staffing a little bit, Vince, you mentioned it earlier, but just, you know, it's obviously still an elephant in the room. And we've spoken briefly before about some of the unique ways you're trying to improve recruitment and retention at your agency. So I was hoping you could explain some of what those strategies are and how you landed on those ideas.
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, if you look at the fact that we're competing, it's such a competitive market for clinicians right now. You know, I think in my county alone, that where our mothership, where our main office is based, they're saying there's 600 nurses are needed to meet the nursing shortage. So with that, I think one, you know, we really need to find ways to let people know about, you know, some of the tremendous value of working in home health. I mean, you know, I come from, even though I'm not a clinician, I have a family of clinicians, from, you know, my mom to my daughters to other people in my lives. And I look at that and, you know, when they work in some of these environments, they're extremely stressful. The hospital environment's a good example. You know, we saw that especially during COVID, but even, you know, when we're not in a pandemic, I mean, there's a lot of stress and they're facing the same issues that we're facing in home health, but home health tends to be a little bit less stressful and you still get to use a lot of your skills. And you're working in a great environment. You get to know these people on a different level and more personal. It really personalizes, I think, healthcare like it was meant to be. And you know, I think that there's things we can do within our own facilities. And so we, in New Mexico, they have a program. It's a nonprofit statewide. It's called Family Friendly New Mexico. And they give a recognition to companies that have implemented family friendly, workplace, policies. And, we're a platinum level, which is the highest level. And there's only one other platinum level company in our town. We're the only platinum level home health and hospice, I believe, in the state, or we were. But what we really look at things are like, hey, what can we do in addition to pay because we are capped there. We can't raise our prices, and prices are going up with supplies and fuel costs. And, you know, we're all seeing that push there. And, you know, even our EMR just released, he sent me an email yesterday saying they're going to raise prices 6% because of the cost of goods and things going up. So it's super competitive for everybody, whether it's, you know, a business or your home life. So what can you do to sweeten the pot? And so we've really tried to do everything we can to be really family friendly, flexible, to provide, you know, our employees the opportunity to, if they don't have daycare and their kids need to come in the office with them, granted, they have to be healthy. That's one thing that we changed during the pandemic is, you know, no more bringing your kids to work if they're ill, unfortunately. But what we can do is we've set up remotes, access to all our systems where they can go home and they can stay home with their children and stuff and still work and be able to do that. You know, we try to implement another holiday. And this was a fun one. My administrative staff was, when I said I wanted to do another paid holiday, they said, we can't do it. And I didn't understand why they would be fighting me on this. And basically it boiled down to staffing. They said, when we close the office, we still have to see patients. We have to staff. So it makes it very difficult. So we implemented a policy where you get your birthday off as a paid holiday. And so it has to be taken within that pay period. You go to your supervisor with the day that you want to take off and we grant it. And so it was an easy way to be able to implement another day paid holiday off where they could take time away. And so there's lots of little things I think there. I think culture is a big part of this. And, you know, we're constantly trying to find ways to improve that culture. And, you know, one of our values and part of our mission statement really based around empathy. And, you know, we talk about the golden rule, but what's the platinum rule? Treating people the way they want to be treated. So asking them, like, what are some things that would help, you know, entice you to, you know, want to come to work and make you enjoy this work experience? How can we sweeten the pot for you and getting feedback from them? So those are just a few things we've done, but I'm super excited about that because, you know, when it boils down to it, you know, we don't necessarily want to work always, but we have to work. And so anything we can do to make that a pleasant experience for people, that they don't dread coming every day, I think is a huge advantage.
And Vince, is there anything in particular that you found to be, you know, maybe the most difficult aspect of recruiting and retaining caregivers these days?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's pay. I think it all boils down to pay. And, you know, I think that, you know, when we deal with, you know, the majority of my caregivers, are paid for through the, you know, the state Medicaid program. And, it's very difficult with the reimbursement rates that we have to be able to, you know, when someone can go and they can work at, a fast food place or, you know, local retail store, make more money and, have a less stressful job. I mean, I think what the caregivers do is so you know, it's real common for them to not receive the recognition they deserve. I mean, they're out there, you know, they're boots on the ground, making sure these people are taking their medication, making sure they're eating and their food's nutritious and making sure they're going to their doctor's appointments, helping them transition from the bed to the chair, to the toilet, to the bath, you know, bathing these people, changing diapers. And, or they can go and they can make, you know, more money flipping hamburgers. I mean, to me, the caregivers really have a passion for this and they deserve more. And, you know, one of the things I talk about often is, you know, we pay our employees well, but, you know, based off our reimbursement rates, but it's still, you know, I'm embarrassed sometimes that we don't have more opportunity to increase those wages. So the best thing I can do is go do advocacy and education and try to get those rates up. But, you know, a lot of these people, they're not necessarily able to take vacations to Disneyland or save for the retirements or, you know, go for, you know, to take their family to a professional football game like a lot of other families can do, but they spend every penny in our local communities. And I think that's a key thing that we make sure that our legislators and our communities know is these people are going in there and there is really is a financial driver for our communities, as well as having a tremendous impact on the wellness, and reducing strain on facilities and things like that. But you know, we've got to do a better job of educating and advocating for these individuals so that we can get them what they deserve. And I'll tell you, I can't say enough good things about the caregivers in the world. I think they're definitely angels for sure.
Yeah. Shifting gears just a little bit again to some of the value-based care conversations. And I feel like data is a buzzword that gets thrown a lot when talking about the future success of home-based care. And so I wanted to ask you, how do you view that hurdle of collecting the right data and leveraging it in a way that is both beneficial to the operation side of things and just financially for your business?
Yeah, I think that's a tough one. You know, we've tried different type of, software out there and, looking at way we can track it, and we're still doing it. But a lot of the information when it comes for CMS and even, it's delayed. So you're not getting a clear picture of what's happening right now. You're getting a picture of what happened a few months ago, a couple of quarters ago. And it's even worse with the Medicare Advantage information and data out there, but it is beneficial, and you can see trends, and we can use that information to go to our referral sources and talk about, hey, this is where we're able to help and make a difference. Please, continue to refer your patients to us. But I think for me, one of the biggest things is seeing where we're maybe missing the mark. I'm looking at that data and saying, okay, we've got to find a way to improve, these outcomes, X, Y, and Z, be able to use that data. But, the real-time data and we know what with value-based purchasing, what they're looking at, what those metrics are. A big one is rehospitalization. So being able to track that stuff real time within our systems, I think is very important. Make sure there's eyes on it and making sure you're looking. I mean, we even track it to the point where, if we have a patient that goes in the hospitalization or goes back in the hospital, we know that. And so we immediately start to look at that and say, okay, where did we miss a mark here? Is there anything that we could have done that could have prevented this? And so I think those systems are really important because, we're going to be measured by them and CMS is using them. And so we've got to be tracking it. I think the downfall, obviously, as we talked earlier, is costs and trying to figure out what's the best bang for your buck and the value in it. But if you're not tracking metrics, you've heard that old adage, if you can't measure, you can't manage it. And I think that's absolutely true. And so anything we can to do to help there, just got to figure out a way to be able to pay for it and get the right one.
And finally, Vince, we'd like to, end these conversations with, maybe a bold prediction or just kind of a prediction in general for whether it's healthcare, home care, home healthcare that you'd either like to share, just kind of that's been on your mind recently about just kind of the future forward thinking success of the industry.
Yeah. It's really simple to me. I was on a healthcare panel not too long ago with some individuals from some of the local hospitals and through a statewide hospital-based system. And, they really have a lot of resources out there, and they're making a lot of noise, trying to shift attention to the work they do, which is really important, without a doubt. But I think what you're going to see is they're going to find that home care is really the best value. If you can treat somebody in their home, which is really where they want to be anyway, nobody wants to be in a hospital or a long-term care facility. They want to be home and find ways to drive some of the attention to that industry so it can grow and we can do more in the home service. And so I think you're going to start seeing more services in the home. And I think one of the easy light lift is caregivers. Currently, Medicare does not pay for a caregiver in the home. Medicaid services do. We've seen value in that. And I think anybody can tell you that, it's way cheaper to prevent a broken hip than to treat a broken hip. And then, with some of our elderly patients, for a lot of them, that truly expedites the death process. You know, it shortens their lifespan when they have something as simple as a broken hip. So not only can we increase the quality of people's life and keep them long, you know, alive longer, I think you're going to see more of a push, hopefully, for caregivers and the value that they can provide in preventative care. And then I think the last piece is, you know, when we look at palliative care and hospice, you know, that's still kind of out there. And I think it just seems to make sense to really find a way to allow these agencies that are already providing home health and hospice to have a strong palliative program with a good reimbursement rate to help people make comfortable and to utilize the hospice services more efficiently. I mean, the studies have shown that people go on hospice, it actually saves CMS money as opposed to those who do not in their end of life. And so, I mean, we really need to find a way to be able to allow that. And I think that you're going to start seeing more attention towards that. And that's going to become a stronger push as well in our industry. And so I'm excited about both of those things. I really think that, to me, they're no-brainers. They're going to save taxpayers money and they're going to reduce the stress on the healthcare system and really show that, you know, even more so the value that home care provides in this industry.
Definitely. Well, before we go, Vince, there is anything else you'd like to add before we sign off?
No, I really appreciate the time and be able to talk to you. I thought about when we first started talking about this, you know, we're a major player in our community and I want to stay here and I love that we do patient care, but what I love more is the jobs we create and the impact we have in people's lives on so many different levels. And I want to see it grow and I want to see it sustain through here. And, you know, I really hope that all these agencies out there, you know, you hear a lot of the people that are on your podcast and you hear a lot of people who speak at conference stuff and they're doing a great job and they're big players out there, but there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, I think still struggling and still trying to find their way and trying to survive changes in CMS. And we're always trying to keep up, but man, stay in the fight because the work you're doing, the jobs you're creating, the things you're doing for your patients is so important and make sure that, you know, I try every day to really stress out to our staff the tremendous value that they give in so many different ways and making the world and our communities a better place. So I'd like to end on that, a positive note, obviously.
That's a great note to end on. I really appreciate the time, Vince, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks, Patrick. It's nice talking to you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Patrick Philbin, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.